Continuing this morning with regards to throughout the Ten Commandments about you shall not commit adultery. What have I? Oh no. This morning's not going well. I want to hug another woman and I've put you shall commit adultery. This is not good. There isn't actually a PowerPoint this morning. That's the only screen because this was done about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm afraid that was the only time I got to do it. We'll keep it up. Well, you can blank it off, but at least you'll remember it here this morning, anyway. You shall not commit adultery. I'm pretty sure my sermon is along those lines and not along the other. But yeah, you don't need to turn to it. It's in Exodus 20, verse 14, with regards to it. It says, you shall not commit adultery. But I also want to read Matthew 5, whenever Jesus talks about the subject. Turn to it if you can. If you have a Bible, turn to Matthew 5, verse 27. If you use your phone, turn to now Matthew 5, verse 27. This is how Jesus talks about this whole subject here. I have been told not to be so long, that there's guidelines I have to stick to, so this morning will be a lot quicker. So this is what Jesus said in verse 27 there. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. That's him referring back to Exodus 20 here straight away. Jesus is referring to that commandment. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Adultery, whenever I was looking at this subject, it's a combination of two things. It's a combination of sexual immorality, when the purpose of sex is not used in its proper context or for its purpose, the sexual immorality, and it's also the breaking of a covenant that you made with your husband and your wife in the presence of God. There's a combination of those two things. And to summarize this commandment, because some people may be confused about the word adultery and so forth, about what this is about, it basically is, it talks about God's ordination of marriage between a man and a woman, which we'll read about in Genesis 2, and how sex consummates that marriage. And it's the only situation that you should find a sexual relationship between a married couple. Now, I know I preached last week with regards to the you shall not murder. And I think that's kind of like obviously affected the way that I've approached this sermon here this morning about this concept, about this commandment. Because I think they've got similarities. See, whenever I was talking about that you shall not commit murder, that people lose sight about the sanctity of life. That they lose sight the fact that people are made in the image of God, that they belittle them or they degrade them, so therefore they become nothing but just physical matter of which you can do whatever you want with them. It doesn't matter whether you kill them whenever they're unborn, it doesn't matter whether you kill them whenever they're old, sure, they're nothing but just physical matter. And they've separated them for God. They don't understand God has the authority over them, that God created them. They were all children of God, made within his image, the possibility of having a spiritual relationship with him. So therefore, they can just justify taking the killing of the innocent life. So it doesn't matter. And I actually think that people can justify sexual immorality because they lose sight of the fact that other people are made in the image of God, that they are actually part of his creation. That there's people in this world, and there may be people within this room or within this church, that can look upon other people as nothing more than sexual objects. That is just there in order for them. So if you degrade the importance of human life, if you remove God and remove the sanctity of life, well, then you can just do what you want. You can kill. You can commit adultery. You can do whatever you want. pornography, inappropriate relationships. Remember here, we're talking about the teachings of Jesus there with regards to even to look at someone in the wrong way is to commit adultery. Pornography and inappropriate relationships, it's all about fulfilling people's lustful desires. During the peak of lockdown, we went through the First Timothy, whenever we were recording the sessions and putting it out there. And one of the passages on there, it talked about looking about your, particularly women, younger women as sisters and older women as your mothers. It talked about basically being a family and how there should be an innocent relationship between us all, that you look upon people as family members, that you would defend them, that you would protect them, that there's nothing crass or horrible the way that you would approach anyone else within the church, but you would uphold their honor. You'd give people value. You'd see them as children of God. You'd see them as family members in Christ, rather than degrading them as the society does. And the Bible places huge value on marriage and on people. And then we only have to look outside for a few seconds to see how the world looks upon them in a completely contrasting way, degrading them and degrading marriage as just objects or something that's temperamental. But pornographic sites on the computer receives more regular traffic than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined in each month. So do you see how the world is viewing people and degrading them? And I think a real challenge for those of you who are married and for those of you who are single is the easy access to these degrading pictures of people, pornographic sites, images, the fact that it's just a click of a button away. But people do it within their own privacy. In fact, we were talking to our friends with a young couple, a 10-year-old they have, and the mother discovered that the 10-year-old had been viewing indecent pictures and videos. And they discovered it accidentally. The 10-year-old just happened to be typing in the wrong thing. You know how you get a link, cookies thing, you get a link that goes to a link that goes to a link, and suddenly this is the sort of sites that they went on. But of course, the 10-year-old's mind was going mad and then continued to investigate into what they had seen. You don't even have to try and purposely look for these images anymore. All you have to do is look at adverts. And this is the way that the world is selling it and the industry, multi-billion-dollar industry. So we can see how society eradicates the meaning and the sanctity of life, which can lead to sexual immorality. But then we can also learn how the world has alternative views about marriage as well. How everything is temporary. How you can basically get married and you can say whatever you want whenever you've got those butterflies going. You can commit and say, oh, that you're, and promise everything. But do you know what? If it doesn't really work out for you, if it's not good for you, if your feelings kind of change, well, hey, you've got an easy option out of it. You're able to go into marriage, well, then you're able to go out of marriage in the same sort of extent, in the same manner. It's kind of like it's now viewed upon as a temporary situation. Divorce, as we all know, it's a regular occurrence throughout the world, throughout this country and all the other countries. So the way that I approach this commandment this morning, that if you combine the world's approach about sex, that, hey, you just objectify everyone, treat them as objects, sorry, and you just, it doesn't matter who you have sex with, but then you also look at the way the world's approach of marriage, with regards to, hey, this is temporary, and if it doesn't really work out for you, well, sure, just opt out, well, then you can see actually how radical this commandment is. We might have gone in this morning and said, oh, you shall not commit adultery, and say, hey, yeah, we've heard it all before. This is radical. What God is saying here, whenever this whole bombardment industry of sex that's being thrown at us all the time, no, I want that to be only within a married couple's relationship. And whenever you get married, it is a permanent situation that you'll find yourselves in, that you'll work at, in order until death does you part. that you're not even to look at another person. This is radical stuff. Not even to look at a person with lust. Otherwise, you've broken this commandment. Well, listen, as I said, the adverts are full of it. The movies are full of it. The TV programs are full of it. Everything around us is sexualized. I'm only stating here what we know. This commandment says, if you look at another person with lust, you have sinned within your heart. God is saying, you do not commit sexual immorality. I want you to stay pure. I want you to stay pure in marriage, and I want you to stay pure in singleness. I want you to stay faithful to your husband and to your wife at all times, for as long as you both shall live. Whenever I was reading Ephesians 5, I noticed that Paul writes about the sexual immorality in the same passage as marriage. That it wasn't two separate issues here. He first of all dealt with sexual immorality, and then he went straight on into being married, about how the two go together, sexual purity and marriage go together. Let me just read here, I'll read it out to you, Ephesians 5 verse 3 and 5, it says, "But among you there must not even be a hint," I mean you could really talk about a hint, "of sexual immorality, or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an adulterer, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God." And then he jumps straight to the marriage there in verse 22. It says there, wives, submit yourselves to your own husband as you do the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to the Christ, so also wives should submit to the husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by washing her with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. God created marriage and he created sex to go together, and they should never be separated. Marriage was first instituted by God in the order of creation, given by God as a solid foundation of human life. In Genesis 2, verse 24, which is the first marriage that we've seen, it says this. This is that God talks about. "This is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh." There you've got a marriage between a man and a woman, and there you have their unity, where they become one. Ephesians, when it talks about marriage, describes our relationship as a church with Christ, and how he is faithful to us, how he serves the church, and that within our married lives that we are to reflect that relationship, the way that Christ loves the church and is faithful to the church, we are to be faithful and love our wives and our husbands. How Christ faithfully loves the church is how a husband is faithfully to love his wife, and how Christ submitted to God is how a wife should submit to a husband. In chapter 5 and verses 31, it says this. Oh, sorry, I've just read that there, yeah. With regards to, "For the reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united with his wife." So, my point here is that if you want to reflect God's covenant, if you want to reflect the way that Jesus serves and is faithful to the church, if you want to have a secure married relationship as God intended, if you want to edify your husband and to build up your wife, then we need to guard and protect sex within our marriage. And for those of you who are single, guard and protect sex only for marriage. And when I say protect it, I mean protect it. I'm saying here that in Matthew it talked about ripping out eyes and cutting off limbs with regards to preventing yourself from going astray. As I said last week, talking about you shall not murder, people who committed the physical act of murder broke the commandment way before they did anything physical. Whenever they had hatred built up in their lives, whenever malice started, whenever they started to get angry with other people, that it was at that point that we learned that they broke the commandment. Before they did anything physical, it was a heart issue, and the heart was the root of the problem. And people who have committed adultery have done so, have broken the commandment, have done so way before any physical act have taken place. With a wandering eye. Watching maybe the wrong TV programs. Randomly searching the internet in boredom is one of the main reasons for looking at indecent pictures. When maybe a bit of flirting has started. I mean, you heard the phrase, I hear it quite a lot when I'm at work, actually, we're only flirting, what harm does that do? Or would you play around at a cliff top with a sheer drop? Because that's what it's like. Just this week, Kerry was in contact with a woman who had got herself, and by the way, I want you to take note, it was the woman, because I know whenever you hear this, quite often you automatically just think of a man. It is a woman who's got herself into all sorts of difficulties and a very dangerous situation. And all it started with was Facebook suggesting she waved at someone. And of course that person happened to be an old boyfriend. And now she's in all sorts of trouble. That's all it took. So whenever it talks about protecting yourselves, this will mean different things for some of us, but it might mean moving a computer into an open room of the house where everyone can see it, which I suggest everyone should be doing. It might mean having someone who you're accountable to. There are people that I exchange websites with so they can keep a check on what I look at and I can check what they look at. Not meeting people of the opposite sex on your own. It might mean removing social media altogether, which for some of us might be equivalent to ripping out an eye because we're so hooked to it. And by the way, I only say this, and you might think I'm wrong here, but there's a particular issue that's been coming up over the last number of years. It's probably come up about 3 or 4 times in conversations with couples and with individuals. I don't understand why, especially between a married couple, why you might argue that your wife or your husband shouldn't have access to your phone. I think my alarm bells are now going whenever, say, oh, hang on, you fight for your privacy. I don't want you going through my things. And I used to think at the start, well, yeah, that's right. And there is a problem that if the other person is constantly having to check up on you and you've given them no reason, well, yes, there is something there in order to talk through. But in order for you to fight to have control over an access where you can have contact with whoever you want privately, and you can look at things that ever you want, and you're saying no one should have access to them, my alarm bells now go through past experience. You should all be able to look at my search engine here. And if there's indecent things about this, well, then you come and you be a good brother and sister in Christ, and you challenge me about it. My wife has got access to my phone with a thumbprint. Not that she snoops through my phone, but if I'm not around and a message or something comes through, she can double check. She should have full access to it. I read the phrase here, if you have nothing to hide, then hide nothing. And it develops trust and honesty within a relationship. I'm not going to, but I could go on about how King David's affair with Bathsheba in the Old Testament there, about, and I point out the fact that King David had an affair with Bathsheba, and he just happened to be at the place where she takes a bath. He happened to place himself there wherever, as if it was by accident. Of course, he wasn't where he should be in the first place. He should have been out on the battlefield, but he was idle. He was bored. He wasn't where he should be. He wasn't working. And of course, he had an affair. He placed himself in a certain situation where there was only going to be one outcome. The decision was made whenever he went walking on the rooftop. At that point, he lost the battle. And of course, it followed with lies and deceit. I think it would be a great discussion to have in engaged groups about keeping each other accountable. What does this look like? How do we protect our marriage? How do we protect singleness? and fulfilling God's commandment that he has set out for us. Because, of course, this is serious. He's talking about judgment, about paying the price. In Matthew 23, I'm not going to read it now, but, well, I'll read part of it. In Matthew 23, Jesus was rebuking the Pharisees here for being hypocritical. Now, these are people who would give an outward appearance of being pure and being great and being able to keep all these commandments perfectly. And Jesus was kind of like having a go at them and rebuking them for harboring sins internally. That they're hypocrites. And he used the concept of tombs where they put dead people in, that they paint them all nice and white on the outside so they're lovely and clean, but actually inside is dead bones and dead people. And he says this to them, "Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites." Now remember, he's talking to the religious people here. This isn't out in the world where you're just trying to challenge people with a different frame of mind. This is going into the church, going into the religious people and saying, "Woe to you, you hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and uncleanliness. So you outwardly appear righteous to others, but you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." And I read that because this commandment has everything to do with the heart, just like all of the other commandments. And then to draw it to a close, but if our marriage, and I didn't spend a long time on it, maybe I should have dealt it more. You could go into a whole sermon about what marriage is for with regards to reflecting God's covenant with us and his faithfulness, the way that we remain faithful to each other. If that is what we're to reflect, what do you think the devil will seek to destroy? You ask Clive and Sheila, right? They don't mind me sharing this. Saturday evening before he would take the pulpit to preach, that's the time that they were attacked week in and week out. Devil will look at something and he'll see the fact of what it's trying to demonstrate and he'll say, "What can I destroy?" The devil wants you to justify looking at sexual images. He wants you to justify flirting as if it's harmless fun with another person. He wants to destroy your relationship with your husband and wife that was bound together in marriage before God. Adultery, it has devastating effects in this world with all the relationships. But it will also bring people into judgment for the eternal effects as they pay the price for their sin. And therefore this commandment, like all the others, it brings us right back to our need for Jesus. And it said we need you in that song, "Oh Lord, how I need you." We recognize the fact that we need Jesus in our marriage. We need him in our singleness as we fight for purity. We need him within our appropriate relationships with each other. If this is a sin that you've fallen at and you stumbled at and you're struggling at, that this we are before and worshipping a God who can forgive you this morning, who can throw those sins, who can refresh and give you new hope and new desires. We need him within our marriages and our relationships. Our marriage is a gift from God, and it should be protected and it should be celebrated. Bob, what did you celebrate last week? I'm glad you had to check that. That's terrible. Yeah. There's me saying 34th year. Yeah. Don't care about your birthday, but congratulations on the 34th year. It should be celebrated. It should be rejoiced at God being at the center of our marriage. Listen, your marriage and the way that you carry yourself in singleness, it can be a light in a dark world. We've talked about how contrasting, how radical this covenant is to what the world is portraying. And we can be a light in a dark world to everyone around us as you live a life which is radical to the world and points everyone towards Jesus. I forgot to actually mention a book, and I don't know whether it's appropriate for everyone or not. But you might know people with children or have your own children, or we've come into contact with a few parents now whose children are becoming teenagers here, and I think it's good to often suggest resources which are good. This is by Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. I don't think it's actually a Christian organization, Glen Clove Press. I don't think it's a Christian press, but Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. We've gone through it with both of our children, and I have honestly learned a lot about the long-term effects of pornography and sexual immorality there, about how it can affect our brains. And it's a really good thing with regards to each chapter being able to go through with your children. So if you know anyone and you'd like to take a name of that, then that's one book that we can actually suggest. So do not commit adultery. I'm going to ask William to come up, maybe at the front. William, if you come up the front and remove your mask and just pray for us before we close in song.
Lord, that you give us the commandments.